Chapter 9. Of genteel society depicted. When the corporal, who had retreated to the street door immediately on hearing the above conversation, returned to the captain's lodgings, and paid his respects to Mrs. Catherine, he found that lady in high good humor. The count had been with her, she said, along with a friend of his, Mr. Trippett, had promised her 12 yards of the lace she coveted so much, had vowed that the child should have as much more for a cloak, and had not left her until he had sat with her for an hour, or more, over a bowl of punch, which he made on purpose for her. Mr. Trippett stayed too. Mighty pleasant man, said she, only not very wise, and seemingly a good deal in liquor. A good deal indeed, said the corporal. He was so tipsy just now that he could hardly stand. He and his honor were talking to Nan Fantail in the marketplace, and she pulled Trippett's wig off, for wanting to kiss her. The nasty fellow, said Mrs. Cat, to demean himself with such low people as Nan Fantail, indeed. Why, upon my conscience now, corporal, it was but an hour ago that Mr. Trippett swore he never saw such a pair of eyes as mine, and would like to cut the captain's throat for the love of me. Nan Fantail, indeed. Nan's an honest girl, Madam Catherine, and was a great favorite of the captain's, before someone else came in his way. No one can say a word against her, not a word. And pray, corporal, whoever did, said Mrs. Cat, rather offended. A nasty ugly slut. I wonder what the men can see in her? As he has got a smart way with her, sure enough. It's what amuses the men, and what? You don't mean to say that my Max is fond of her now? Said Mrs. Catherine, looking very fierce. Oh, no, not at all. Not of her, that is, not of her, screamed she. Of whom, then? Oh, saw, nonsense. Of you, my dear, to be sure, who else should he care for? And, besides, what business is it of mine? And herewith the corporal began whistling, as if he would have no more of the conversation. But Mrs. Cat was not to be satisfied, not she, and carried on her cross questions. Why, look you, said the corporal, after parrying many of these, hi, look you, I'm an old fool, Catherine, and I must blab. That man has been the best friend I ever had, and so I was quiet. But I can't keep it in any longer, no, hang me if I can. It's my belief he's acting like a rascal by you. He deceives you, Catherine. He's a scoundrel, Mrs. Hall, that's the truth on it. Catherine prayed him to tell all he knew, and he resumed. He wants you off his hands. He's sick of you, and so brought here that fool Tom Trippett, who has taken a fancy to you. He has not the courage to turn you out of doors like a man, though indoors he can treat you like a beast. But I'll tell you what he'll do. In a month he will go to Coventry, or pretend to go there, on recruiting business. No such thing, Mrs. Hall. He's going on marriage business, and he'll leave you without a farthing, to starve or to rot, for him. It's all arranged, I tell you. In a month, you are to be starved into becoming Tom Trippett's mistress, and his honor is to marry rich Miss Dripping, the 20,000-pounder from London, and to purchase a regiment, and to get old Brock drummed out of cuts too, said the corporal, under his breath. But he might have spoken out, if he chose, for the poor young woman had sunk on the ground in a real honest fit. I thought I should give it her, said Mr. Brock as he procured a glass of water, and, lifting her onto a sofa, sprinkled the same over her. Hang it! How pretty she is! Asterisk, 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 when Mrs. Catherine came to herself again, Brock's tone with her was kind, and almost feeling. Nor did the poor wench herself indulge in any subsequent shiverings and hysterics, such as usually follow the fainting fits of persons of higher degree. She pressed him for further explanations, which he gave, and to which she listened with a great deal of calmness. Nor did many tears, sobs, sighs, or exclamations of sorrow or anger escape from her. Only when the corporal was taking his leave, and said to her point blank, "Well, Mrs. Catherine, and what do you intend to do?" she did not reply a word, but gave a look which made him exclaim, on leaving the room, "By heavens, the woman means murder. I would not be the Holofernes to lie by the side of such a Judith as that, not I." And he went his way, immersed in deep thought. When the captain returned at night, she did not speak to him, and when he swore at her for being sulky, she only said as he had a headache, and was dreadfully ill, with which excuse Gustavus Adolphus seemed satisfied, and left her to herself. He saw her the next morning for a moment. He was going a shooting. Catherine had no friend, as is usual in tragedies and romances, no mysterious sorceress of her acquaintance to whom she could apply for poison, so she went simply to the apothecary's, pretending at each that as he had a dreadful toothache, and procuring from them as much laudanum as she thought would suit her purpose. When she went home again she seemed almost gay. Mr. Brock complimented her upon the alteration in her appearance, and she was enabled to receive the captain at his return from shooting in such a manner as made him remark that as he had got rid of her sulks of the morning, and might sup with them, if she chose to keep her good humor. The supper was got ready, and the gentleman at the punch bowl, when the cloth was cleared, Mrs. Catherine, with her delicate hands, preparing the liquor. It is useless to describe the conversation that took place, or to reckon the number of bowls that were emptied, or to tell how Mr. Trippett, who was one of the guests, and declined to play at cards when some of the others began, chose to remain by Mrs. Catherine's side, and make violent love to her. All this might be told, and the account, however faithful, would not be very pleasing. No, indeed. And here, though we are only in the third chapter of this history, we feel almost sick of the characters that appear in it, and the adventures which they are called upon to go through. But how can we help ourselves? The public will hear of nothing but rogues, and the only way in which poor authors, who must live, can act honestly by the public and themselves, is to paint such thieves as they are. Not dandy, poetical, rose-water thieves, but real downright scoundrels, leading scoundrelly lives, drunken, profligate, dissolute, low, as scoundrels will be. They don't quote Plato, like Eugene Aram, or live like gentlemen, and sing the pleasantest ballads in the world, like Jolly Dick Turpin, or prate eternally about O'Callan, asterisk like that precious canting Multiverse, whom we all of us have read about and pitied, or die whitewashed saints, like poor Estatian Liver Twist. No, my dear madam, you and your daughters have no right to admire and sympathize with any such persons, fictitious or real. You ought to be made cordially to detest, scorn, loathe, abhor, and abominate all people of this kidney. Men of genius like those whose works we have above alluded to have no business to make these characters interesting or agreeable, to be feeding your morbid fancies, or indulging their own, with such monstrous food. For our parts, young ladies, we beg you to bottle up your tears, and not waste a single drop of them on any one of the heroes or heroines in this history. They are all rascals, every soul of them, and behave as such. Keep your sympathy for those who deserve it. Don't carry it, for preference, to the Old Bailey, and grow maudlin over the company assembled there. Asterisk anglicized version of the author's original Greek text. Just then, have the kindness to fancy that the conversation which took place over the bowls of punch which Mrs. Catherine prepared was such as might be expected to take place where the host was a dissolute, daredevil, libertine captain of dragoons, the guests for the most part of the same class, and the hostess a young woman originally from a country alehouse, and for the present mistress to the entertainer of the society. They talked, and they drank, and they grew tipsy, and very little worth hearing occurred during the course of the whole evening. Mr. Brock officiated, half as the servant, half as the companion of the society. Mr. Thomas Trippett made violent love to Mrs. Catherine, while her lord and master was playing at dice with the other gentlemen. And on this night, strange to say, the captain's fortune seemed to desert him. The Warwickshire squire, from whom he had won so much, had an amazing run of good luck. The captain called perpetually for more drink, and higher stakes, and lost almost every throw. 300, 400, 600, all his winnings of the previous months, were swallowed up in the course of a few hours. The corporal looked on, and, to do him justice, seemed very grave as, some by some, the squire scored down the count's losses on the paper before him. Most of the company had taken their hats and staggered off. The squire and Mr. Trippett were the only two that remained, the latter still lingering by Mrs. Catherine's sofa and table, and as she, as we have stated, had been employed all the evening in mixing the liquor for the gamesters, he was at the headquarters of Love and Drink, and had swallowed so much of each as hardly to be able to speak. The dice went rattling on, the candles were burning dim, with great long wicks. Mr. Trippett could hardly see the captain, and thought, as far as his muzzy reason would let him, that the captain could not see him. So he rose from his chair as well as he could, and fell down on Mrs. Catherine's sofa. His eyes were fixed, his face was pale, his jaw hung down, and he flung out his arms and said, in a maudlin voice, "Oh, you beautiful Catherine, I must have a kiss. Beast," said Mrs. Catherine, and pushed him away. The drunken wretch fell off the sofa, and onto the floor, where he stayed, and, after snorting out some unintelligible sounds, went to sleep. The dice went rattling on, the candles were burning dim, with great long wicks. "Seven's the main," cried the count. "R. 3-2-2 against the caster." "Ponies," said the Warwickshire squire. "Rattle, rattle, 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 clatter, 9. Clap, 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 11. Clutter, 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 clutter. Even it is," says the Warwickshire squire. "Hat makes 800, count." "One throw for 200, said the count. "Ut stop. Cat, give us some more punch." Mrs. Cat came forward. She looked a little pale, and her hand trembled somewhat. "Here's the punch, Max," said she. It was steaming hot, in a large glass. "Aunt drink it all," said she, "leave me some." "How dark it is," said the count, eyeing it. "It's the brandy," said Cat. "Well, here goes. Squire, curse you. Here's your health, and bad luck to you." And he gulped off more than half the liquor at a draught. But presently he put down the glass and cried, "What infernal poison is this, Cat?" "Poison," said she. "Tea's no poison. Give me the glass." And she pledged Max, and drank a little of it. "'Tis good punch, Max, and of my brewing, I don't think you will ever get any better." And she went back to the sofa again, and sat down, and looked at the players. Mr. Brock looked at her white face, and fixed eyes with a grim kind of curiosity. The count sputtered, and cursed the horrid taste of the punch still, but he presently took the box, and made his threatened throw. As before, the squire beat him, and having booked his winnings, rose from table as well as he might, and besought to lead him downstairs, which Mr. Brock did. Liquor had evidently stupefied the count. He sat with his head between his hands, muttering wildly about ill luck, seven's the main, bad punch, and so on. The street door banged to, and the steps of Brock and the squire were heard, until they could be heard no more. "Max," said she, but he did not answer. "Ax," said she again, laying her hand on his shoulder. "Curse you," said that gentleman, "keep off, and don't be laying your paws upon me. Go to bed, you jade, or two, for what I care, and give me first some more punch, a gallon more punch, do you hear?" The gentleman, by the curses at the commencement of this little speech, and the request contained at the end of it, showed that his losses vexed him, and that he was anxious to forget them temporarily. "Oh, Max," whimpered Mrs. Cat, "you don't want any more punch?" "Don't," Shan't I be drunk in my own house, you cursed whimpering jade, you? Get out. And with this the captain proceeded to administer a blow upon Mrs. Catherine's cheek. Contrary to her custom, she did not avenge it, or seek to do so, as on the many former occasions, when disputes of this nature had arisen between the Count and her. But now Mrs. Catherine fell on her knees, and, clasping her hands and looking pitifully in the Count's face, cried, "Oh, Count, forgive me, forgive me. Forgive you. What for? Because I slapped your face? Ha, ha. I'll forgive you again, if you don't mind." "Oh, no, no, no," said she, wringing her hands. "T isn't that. Max, dear Max, will you forgive me? It isn't the blow I don't mind that. It's what, you maudlin fool? It's the punch." The Count, who was more than half seas over, here assumed an air of much tipsy gravity. He punched. "No, I never will forgive you that last glass of punch. Of all the foul, beastly drinks I ever tasted, that was the worst. No, I never will forgive you that punch." "Oh, it isn't that, it isn't that," said she. "I tell you it is that, you. That punch, I say that punch was no better than poison." And here the Count's head sank back, and he fell to snore. "It was poison," said she. "What?" screamed he, waking up at once, and spurning her away from him. "Hat, you infernal murderess, have you killed me? Oh, Max. Don't kill me, Max. It was laudanum indeed it was. You were going to be married, and I was furious, and I went and got..." "Hold your tongue, you fiend," roared out the Count, and with more presence of mind than politeness, he flung the remainder of the liquor and, indeed, the glass with it, at the head of Mrs. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.